Yo, real quick, folks, just want to let you know something. Later on in the show, you're going to hear us talk about Breonna Taylor's murderers and how they were not charged on the same day as Emmett Till was killed. That's not true. What we messed it up. So really, what ended up happening was Emmett Till's murderers were acquitted on the same day that Breonna Taylor's murderers got off as well. So it's even closer in terms of connection than what we said in the show. Just wanted to clear that up. All right, y'all. What up, folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 119. I don't know why I'm asking y'all.
I don't know why either.
I know y'all don't know. You know, because y'all just don't be prepared out here. But it is 119, so shout out to me.
Well, wait, hold on a minute. We're not prepared. You don't know the number either.
But I do. I just said it, and I was right. So clearly I know it, right? we are Get Out the Room. We are a pop culture horror podcast. Really, anything we feel like talking about, whenever we feel like talking about it. I'm your host, Day, as always. I got my people with me. My man, Scott, what's going on? Fresh off of his first work trip.
Yeah, boy, I tell you what, you wouldn't know that there was a pandemic going on based on the Charlotte airport today. Mm. It was packed. It was slammed.
That is scary. And why we will never, ever have our children go back to school. And the greatest Caribbean hero, Tom, what's going on, brother?
Another day in paradise.
Yeah. Is it raining out there still?
Oh, yes. It can't stop, won't stop. I got another month and a half of this shit.
Your whole goddamn island is underwater. It's crazy. But yeah, we are Get Out the Room. You can find us any and everywhere good podcasts are found. Podomatic, Stitcher Radio, what's that? Apple Podcast, Google Podcast. And you can also soon find us on Stitcher Radio and Amazon Podcast. Look, yeah, I know. So you got to do it, right? You just find one, click add, subscribe. Let's get the numbers up.
Let's get the numbers up, and eventually, you know, if you ever get sick of us by chance, I mean, after Lovecraft, there's a good chance that we'll be going back to once every 5 months.
I don't know if that's true. We're still stuck.
I know.
Maybe every other week, but
yeah, you know, yeah,
we're all stuck in the house. We ain't going nowhere. Well, you might be, as you just told us, you in Charlotte. But my brown behind, right the fuck here.
Yeah, I'm not going nowhere.
Yeah. And I ain't traveling. We already started talking about we going to host events in person. I'm like, at the earliest. It's going to be a year at the earliest. So don't be looking for me using that that known traveler number anytime soon.
I will say this.
Okay.
So I was down there for 2 days, wore a mask every time I was out in public, everywhere. The only, I don't have it on when I'm driving. I don't have it on when I'm eating. I don't have it on when I'm in my hotel room. It was as normal as it could be now. Under the circumstances. So I say it was slammed. Everybody has a mask on at the airport. But I was shocked at the crowd size. My flight from Charlotte was at like 6:15, and I was in the, what they call the plaza, which is kind of like the central location where everybody walks to their concourse and their gate. And, if there were no masks, it would just be like, the only difference was masks. You can't social distance when there's that many people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, they tried, the restaurants do their best, but people, you know, the line is right there next to a table, or people are getting off their flight or going to their flight right next to your table. And it's just it was a sight to behold, but I didn't feel, I don't know that I felt unsafe. I don't know if that's the right word for it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's because your ass was happy to be out of the house.
I think that's why.
My bad, Erica.
Yes, but, you know, there was anxiousness, of course, but it was, I think you're right. It was anxiousness in terms of it just being different. And yeah, I was out of the house. I think that's ultimately it.
You was like, it's not the same four walls. I will, you know, bathe in hand sanitizer later, but I am not at home. Fuck that.
Well, that was, I came home and Eric goes, you're taking a shower, right? I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, that's the first thing I'm doing.
Yeah. Put those clothes right in the garage. Bring them and wash those immediately. Those boots, they go, spray those down. Get those out of here.
Hey, why are you lighting those on fire, honey? Right. Don't worry about it.
Don't even trip. I don't always like to talk about this shit. Like, I think some people are like, why do you guys always do this? And I'll tell you the reason why we do this is because shit keeps happening. We talk about Black Lives Matter a lot here.
And well, they can't possibly think we enjoy this. That's right. Not, I mean, come on.
Right. Right. Particularly this time, you know. Breonna Taylor became somewhat of a rallying cry around why we talk about Black Lives Matter, why we talk about just the existence in this country meaning less than other people. For those who don't know, Breonna Taylor was asleep in her apartment with her boyfriend, and police officers came in, broke her down, start shooting, kill her, the whole deal, right? So for, 120 days? And on the anniversary, 65 years to the day that Emmett Till was killed, the grand jury put out that none of the police officers would be indicted on any charges, but the only charges that would be levied were for, I believe, wanton endangerment.
Yeah, and it was just one of the guys.
Yeah, one of the guys, three charges, which is basically the bullets that went towards the neighbors. So the bullets that didn't hit anything or anyone, that shit is what he got charged with, but the killing of somebody who was asleep in their own apartment is completely and utterly okay.
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, honestly, I would like to consider myself a relatively articulate person at this point. I'm just literally out of words for this shit. You know, you put this together with the fact that they literally tried to bribe her boyfriend, the one who got shot at the time, by saying they tried to bribe him with time off to say that, you know, she had drugs on her, that she was dealing drugs. And I don't know where the brother found the intestinal fortitude to not take the deal and then leak that. Like, this is like movie villain shit. Like, the shit that they're doing is,
it's every corrupt cop movie plot line that you've ever read.
Yeah, this is Batman shit. This is Gotham City. This is the kind of shit that you don't think happens in real life.
Yep.
I never expected the police department or any systemic organization. Let's not pick on cops. Organizations are organisms. They have an immune system, and they will fight to maintain homogeneity, you know, homeostasis, excuse me. They will fight to stay the same. That's how organizations work. It's not just the cops. I didn't expect them to behave honorably or nobly or anything at all like that.
Hold themselves accountable.
Yeah, that's still not the way organizations work. But this shit right here, you know, this is cartoon villain shit. This is otherworldly. I'm disappointed isn't even a strong enough word for yep. what I feel right now.
Yep.
It feels fictional.
Yep.
Yeah. It's on that real deal. Truth is stranger than fiction. Bullshit. Like, this is, it's incredible the bullshit that they are pulling, and despite the fact that they are 100% in the public eye right now. They are still pulling fucking stunts.
Yep, and acting like whatever we see is not true, and still it doesn't matter.
They own some real Obi-Wan bullshit. These are not the droids you're looking for. Like, nigga, I can see what you're doing. This isn't, you know, this isn't working.
There is no spoon. There is no spoon. There is no spoon.
I mean, we're saying all this, and this is on top of the situation I just described being in a really crowded airport. This is the same situation of earlier today were talking through text about how California sky is on fire, and there's a video online that somebody made comparing the sweeping shots of Blade Runner 2049 to the sweeping shots of San Francisco with the same music playing over it, and you can barely tell the difference. This is on top of people or our government currently trying to rig the election coming up. I mean, this is literally, these are plot lines to movies we would go see, and it's real. This is like, this is it. This is what's happening in our country. I mean, it's just, you turn on CNN and you're just going like, I mean, what movie is this? What movie is this now? This is, how can this keep happening?
Yeah, this dastardly. You know, but this also, it calls into play like the Second Amendment, folks, the right to bear arms to protect yourself. The NRA, where are they now? Right, particularly when there has always been this call that says none of this is about race, it's just about these rights. Well, I mean, we knew that was bullshit when Philando Castile was shot with, you know, all of his permits, all his shit. Like, that was wholly in the NRA's sweet spot. They didn't say anything. Right?
It doesn't really matter. I mean, people who they seek to find reasons to discredit you. It doesn't matter what you do. You know, this is the inherent fallacy of respectability politics. If you just X, Y, and Z, I will, you know, you have less to worry about. But the truth of the matter is, if I have to perform circus tricks just to get you to nominally respect me, you so little respect for me in the beginning, none of that's going to work.
Yep.
You know, it just doesn't, it doesn't work. And so, you know, it's a real catch-22 situation. And it's that, you know, to Scott's point, the shit that we're seeing right now is, this is a Bond movie plot. You know, we got the police murdering people left and right. They're not copping to it. Nobody's taking accountability. The president's fucking trying to throw the goddamn election. And at the same time,
to topple the entire.
Right.
Well, plus we haven't even mentioned RBG and the whole Supreme Court justice shit.
Well, I haven't even gotten there. At the same time. At the same time, he's trying to like pretend like he's not going to turn over power if he loses, and then
which is smoke and mirrors. He will. He'll
right. Know. Of course, but that's it's insane, you know. And then of course there's RBG shit, which comes after them stealing Obama's last. Judicial pick.
Like, yeah, Garland would have been a great centrist pick.
Yeah, the shit
been on there for a long right time.
It's fucking insane. This is fucking insane. You know, they're not even pretending to hide the fucking hypocrisy. You know, Mitch McConnell ain't saying shit other than like, you know, the president's pick will have a trial in the Senate. That's all he can say. He can't say, you know, they're not even pretending anymore.
Yeah, that he announced that the day RBG died.
Yep.
Which is like, think about the fucking balls. Like, a woman is dead. Her body is.
They were fucking waiting. Him and Trump were waiting for that shit.
Oh no, he was at a rally when they heard the news, and his handlers decided not to tell him while he was on stage because they were afraid the crowd was going to cheer, and they knew how that would look.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but the crowd would have cheered.
They absolutely would have cheered.
And you probably would have started clapping too.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, I'm gonna say like I so. Ooh, at the risk of people being upset by what I'm about to say, I do not want this to invalidate any of the iconic work that she did during her lifetime. But she should have gotten out when Obama was president.
So that brings up an interesting point.
Yeah.
I think I agree with you because, I mean, we were all sitting here. I mean, you know, Eric and I would always joke. We would always be sitting there going like, man, if Trump wins, RBG is just going to have to hang on for another 4 years.
Right.
Man, that sucks.
Now, imagine if she had gotten out in time so that she could have enjoyed the last 9 years of her life without having to hold on.
You made a very, very, very good point. And you know what? I feel like that's probably a conversation that Obama probably had had with her at some point.
Right.
I mean, he could foresee, you know, he's not dumb. He probably was going like, hey, come on, I got somebody. And she, no, not yet. We're okay.
How do you do that though? How do you tell RBG, yo, I'd really like you to step down. It's like, I mean,
particularly as she's the liberal leader of the Supreme Court.
Right.
That would seem utter disrespect.
There's no way. And I think Obama was far too bright to broach that subject.
Admittedly, you know, with our 2020 hindsight, it makes sense. Right. But no one anticipated someone having the kind of just
destructive force Trump has. Nobody expected our entire governmental system to be wantonly just disregarded and blown up in a manner that it currently has been. So,
well, what he has brought to light is a lot of the things that we thought of as rules were really unwritten rules.
Yep.
There were norms.
Yep.
And, you know, if I choose not to follow these, then they have no power over me.
Right. What are you going to do?
Yeah, we may need to really take a look at our system and start putting some teeth into
checks
our
checks and balances. We talk about checks and balances. We talk about
but it's only in spirit. It's only in spirit.
Right. What are the three different branches, just so, you know, we make sure that there are checks and balances, so we do not end up with a dictator or a king or a queen.
Right.
And like you said, it's all bullshit. Because this motherfucker out here just making any decision he want, and ain't nobody saying shit.
Yeah, just living wild and reckless.
Because these bitch ass motherfuckers are scared.
Well, and the people who, like the Republicans, know that what really matters are these Supreme Justice picks.
Yep.
I mean, Trump's going to go away, whether it's this year, whether it's in 2024. The motherfucker's going away at some point.
Yeah,
I mean,
they just need to expand the Supreme Court.
And so the Democrats have brought that up recently, which is a kind of a it helps, you know, make things a little better when you hear that and go, okay, well, that would help. But, you know, filling this seat Trump wise gives them what? I think it's 6-3 then.
Yep.
So
that's why that bitch has to go up.
Yep.
You know, even if it's, you know, 11 or 13, I don't know what the number is. I don't know an issue, but all I know is that this shit cannot continue. And everybody who has been silent and complicit has to burn in hell and has to go down with this motherfucker.
Yeah, I don't think there's any, there's no question. Like, and this is going to sound super partisan of me, and I try not to do that, but I mean, I really feel like there needs to be some kind of reckoning for the Republican Party. I mean, he gave us Bush, gave us W. That turned out terribly. You would have given us Palin. God help us. Yeah. Thank God for Obama. And then immediately after Obama, you give us this fucking red-faced buffoon who was literally breaking our goddamn country apart.
Yeah. Like,
do you have any fucking shame? Like, at some point, are you going to be like, yeah, we might have win a little bit.
Oh, that's dead shit, man. They're never gonna announce. They're never.
No,
gonna
I know.
Ever.
But it's just like we as a people, at some point, like, you know, I made this analogy before, but like, you know, if your kids crash a car into a ditch and they do it once and then they do it twice, maybe don't give them the keys on the third time.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe you got to revoke these driving privileges for a little bit.
Yep. You got to sit over here with me. Yeah,
I mean, you could look, but you could look at, I mean, Mitch McConnell's a great example of that. I mean, so, you know, I hear a lot more. Well, right, term limits. Exactly. That's where I was going with this.
My bad.
I mean, no. So I hear about it a lot more. You know, I mean, Kentucky is right across the river from us. And, I mean, Mitch McConnell is, you know, I mean, he's popular down there, man. I mean, people like that motherfucker. I mean,
he's vulnerable. He's vulnerable. They're close. They vary.
Oh, I like what's her name, the Democrat. I see her commercials all the time. And Amy McGrath.
Yep. I'd love to see her win.
I would too, but I don't have a good feeling about it. I just don't.
I mean, they do a lot of lying and cheating to keep their positions of power. So
incumbency is a hell of a drug. It's hard for anybody to beat the incumbent.
I agree.
But he's more vulnerable now than he ever has been. And frankly, we're within a hair's distance of flipping the Senate to begin with. So we could really do some things if we decide to do some things.
Yeah, but I mean, but it means not placating and playing nice. And we got to change all this shit and do it differently.
Absolutely. Well, I think at this point, it would be foolish not to recognize that the left is playing by a set of rules, is playing a game by a set of rules that only they are following.
Yep.
So, you know, if it's going to be like this, you know, then let it be like this. If they take this pick, then let them take this pick. Flip the Senate. You flip the Senate, change the rules, pack the court, impeach Kavanaugh because we have grounds to do so,
yep.
And just keep moving. Keep moving.
Yep.
Like, who cares about what people say?
No,
like, play the same game.
You bring up, so there it is. That's what I think I've talked to Damon about this.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this kind of ad-lib.
It bothers me. It bothers me. And Damon's point is always, well, the Democrats won't do that. And I get it. But you have been for 4 years, you're fighting a losing battle. And to somebody who, you know, I mean, you know, when Trump was elected, I mean, the thought was, how did this idiot get elected the way that he did? I mean, they were trying to prove Russia, but that Russia had influence over him becoming president. And
we've proven pretty much that it did.
Well, I think even you can read articles or look into how Russia admitted that they were using social media like yep. Facebook to their advantage. I mean, they've, yep. you know, that is proven. Yep. So why, and I always tell Dave, I was like, let's play the, why can't the Democrats play by their rules?
Yep.
Why can't they just do that? You yep. know, I mean, why can't that happen?
I agree with you. For the same reason I say that Democratic nominees have to be these fucking shining knights, you
yep.
know, where they have to be perfect, and every other nominee who even comes on a Democratic ticket has all of their mistakes, every aspect that makes them vulnerable to question or attack laid bare within the entire, you know, liberal process. So by the time you make it to the stage, they didn't already killed you.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the Republicans like, who in the room? Who in the room? You in the room? Cool, fuck it. We running with you. That's it. That right there blows my mind. Like, what is it about particularly liberal and even some Green Party motherfuckers who just get on my nerves at this point, who think they can stand by and watch the world burn and say, well, this is not my problem. The, you know, we should have a third party. You know, this is what we've been telling you. Shut the fuck up. That indifferent fucking... Like,
well, the lack of writ, to be completely honest, I like the idea of a third party. However,
everybody likes the idea of a third party.
The Green Party,
that doesn't make sense right now.
They don't
anybody who isn't voting against Trump is voting for him.
It doesn't make sense because a third party right now, they don't have policies. They don't know what they're talking about. These guys get up there and go, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. All right, well, let's go into some depth here. I mean, at least Democrats and Republicans have depth. We may not agree with all of it, one party or the other, but they at least have policies and history to back them up.
The Green Party,
don't have anything.
They don't even matter.
They don't have anything.
My whole thing is...
Absolutely, it does matter.
No.
Absolutely.
That shit don't matter to me. Because
you don't have a parliamentary system.
Right.
That's the problem. Right. If you had a parliamentary system, I'd be all for that third party shit because You know, then we wouldn't be playing a zero sum game. Mm-hmm. We're playing tug of war. You know what I mean? There's two poles, and any distraction one way or the other, third party candidates always end up hurting whichever side of the line they come on. That's why independent hurt the Republicans, Green Party, et cetera, hurts Democrats. It's a zero sum game. And anybody that, if you're not smart enough to understand that, you shouldn't be running for president. I don't think the Jill Steins and the Ralph Naders were naive or dumb enough not to understand that what they were doing in our zero sum game system was hurting the Democratic side. And if they say anything other than that, then I think, well, then you never should have been president in the first place. Because I'm not qualified to be president, but I'm smart enough to know that.
Look, those motherfuckers are far too bright to not understand the implications of what they're doing. Right? I think we've gotten to the point now.
Yeah, it's disingenuous. Just be real. I have no more space. Like, after everything that we've gone through, I have a motherfucker who called for the death of Central Park 5 after they were found innocent.
Yep.
And he's in the White House.
Yep.
I don't have no more space for bullshit.
Yeah, how do we even allow this motherfucker past that? But we kept it moving, right? Why? Because like Tone just said, it's a zero-sum game. It is not the best candidate. It is who is the one that's going closest to my house.
But remember, you know why they picked Trump, though, in 16 or in 15 or whenever all of us realized he was going to be the nominee? It was because Trump had so much support that he would have pulled away as a third party and really, really fucked the Republicans at that point. They had to pick him. They had to side with him.
Yeah, but that's just chickens coming home to roost.
Right.
They did this. They did this fucking Southern strategy bullshit since the fucking 50s. And he is instead of using dog whistles and euphemisms and all that other bullshit that they taught them to do, he just came out and said shit. He pulled an LBJ, put his dick on the table, and said, "Look, this is what I'm about. I'm about I'm about hurting them, and I'm about helping you."
Yep.
And everybody wanted to run around and clutch their pearls, but it was the same thing. It's the same game they've been running since the 60s.
Yeah, it's just dumbed down.
Yeah, he just said it outright, and people are like, boom, I love it. I have no sympathy for the Republicans. Like, this is a grave that they dug, they picked out, they dug, and then laid down in.
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of people who feel like modern politics has moved away from them, particularly as the political structure has become more intelligent, so to speak, right? The layperson feels intimidated by our own fucking system. Why? Because we have PACs, we have super PACs, we have lobbying firms, we have all these fucking caucuses. Don't none of that shit make no fucking sense. Who is the candidate? How many votes do they have? You got more votes, you win. That's the way democracy works almost everywhere else in the world, except here. This shit got really fucking complicated when the motherfuckers who had the power started getting a little threatened, like, wait a minute, we might lose the power. We got to do some shit to make sure we don't lose power. That's why our system is the way it is. So we say all that to say, we know that the motherfuckers in Kentucky was never going to hold them accountable, because ain't no way the system that brought you up is going to snitch on you and let you go when it's time for you to be held accountable. And the fucking DA who's married to Mitch McConnell's niece, fuck him in the goat ass. I hope he dies. I hope his dick falls off. Corona, I hope he gets the crinkly, most bitterest ass boil and, like, just everything painful. I want syphilis of the toe. I want all of it. Fuck him. He sat up here and cried. You know why? Because that was the first time he had to come to grips with the fact that he sold his goddamn soul, and the whole world knows it. Fuck him. My bad, Joe.
No,
fail with your chest.
Absolutely.
I almost stood up and saluted, goddammit.
Yeah, I mean, hey. There we go. I like that. See, there we go. Good. Uncut Damon.
Yeah,
hear it only on Get Out the Room.
Look, I don't always, you know, I tend to be measured in my words from time to time. That shit don't happen all the time. When we get to this type of shit, my words are not as measured, because I don't feel like they should or need to be. We're sitting in a situation where black folks are being killed in ways, like new ways, right? You can say, okay, well, they have to hold, like, somebody has to recognize it now. Shit has to come up now. They're going to do something this time. And each time we say, Ahmaud Arbery, this motherfucker just running down the street.
Just jogging.
What the fuck?
Just jogging.
Like, in what part of I'm just living? Do you know how fucking exhausting it is to be black and exist in this world and for motherfuckers to tell you that that shit ain't true?
Oh, it's a real thing.
I don't have any patience for these motherfuckers. People sit up here and tell me about, oh, well, you know, my friend, you know, we can have disagreements. We can disagree on ideology. This shit ain't about ideological differences. This is about whether or not you believe that my existence in the world is worth the same amount as you. If you don't believe that, then we cannot be friends. We cannot be homies. We can't sit up here and have drinks anymore. I'm not breaking bread with you. I'm not going to sit up here and act like this is, you know, the 80s where people have different ideological ideals from Reaganomics, you know, which is the start of all this dumb shit. You know, and Carter's kind of, you know, help everybody humanitarian, which this motherfucker is still doing, by the way, right?
To this day.
To this day. So, this ain't that. This is, we have proven to you that all of the little, like Tom said, the chickens have come home to roost. When we gave away the military surplus to local police departments, and we took away their options outside of resources for services that were not just first responders with badges and guns. This is how we got here. So I don't want to hear that shit. Don't sit up here and act like you don't know what defund means. I mean, do you want me to make it? We can make it more plain. Let's just reappropriate some funds. How about that?
It's the same. Go, Tom.
Out here in Wichita, there's this expats group, which kills me that we call ourselves expats. Same. Can't expatriate in a territory, but whatever. I'm a grammar Nazi, whatever. But it's an expats group full of people from the mainland out here in Puerto Rico, mainly like business people, like. And people who speak English or have connections out here. So I'm in this group, and they're talking about this woman had her house broken into down here. And police came out. She complained that she felt that they weren't taking her seriously, so much so that this I had to cackle at. One of the cops ordered Uber Eats because it was lunchtime and had it delivered to her house. While he's taking her report.
The disrespect. God damn.
So cold-blooded.
That is cold-blooded.
I tell you, I had to cackle. Like, if it was me, I would have wanted to fight somebody.
No, that's absolutely cackle-worthy. Yes, is.
Come on. Oof. And so she's sad about all this, and then some cat comes in and he says, yep, defund the police. And then, you know, I'm already starting to get hot. And then, you know, she says, like, well, you know, they're not paid very well, and so they don't take their jobs very seriously, and yada, 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 yada. At this point, I'm starting to get more angry, so I just said, like, hey, defund the police is poor. It's not understood well because it's probably poorly named, and I understand that, but what they're really talking about is a reallocation of resources away from the police departments into other areas. Also, and this was something that a lot of people I have only recently learned myself, the way our police departments are set up here is different than they are in most industrialized nations. We put a lot of money towards quote-unquote B cops, line staff cops, three low cops. Most departments put most of their money towards sergeants and detectives. So, like, when your shit gets stolen, somebody's there to actually investigate that. When your cousin Ricky gets shot, somebody's there to actually investigate that. But we don't have that. So in the hood, where people get shot a lot, where people get robbed a lot. You have vigilante justice. This is the reason why we have street gangs. So we'll pull you over every 5 seconds to try to get a drug bust. That's because that funding comes specifically from the DEA. That's money that they can count on. So we'll harass you every second and every day looking for drugs. But when something real happens, we just don't have the staff to take care of it. So you feel simultaneously harassed, over-policed, and under-policed. There's nobody there to solve your problems. And I'm trying to explain this to this woman, and I say to this guy, like, yeah, I get, you know, it's complicated, but, like, don't make light of a system that was literally designed so that people like me don't have to be afraid every time they see a cop. So here comes this Karen in the thread talking about, well, it's all about respect. You show them respect and they'll respect you. And I'm like, look, I'm respectful of everybody I meet. They ain't got shit to do with
it. Yeah, bullshit.
But first of all, let's say I'm not respectful. Let's say me and you on the street and you disrespect me and then I smack you across the face. That's assault, right? How is that any different if one of us is wearing a uniform? She ain't say nothing after that. And I probably shouldn't have included her in the example because that sounded like a threat, and I did that on purpose. So I'm bad for that. But still, though, like, people.
If you took it like a threat, I meant it that way. Fuck you.
I mean, and I did. I'm not gonna lie. You know, I was wrong for that. I do it again. I don't have any regrets. But the point that I'm making.
Is, yeah, like, no, you're playing by their rules. You're right. Playing by their rules.
And the point that I'm That's making, it. Like, fine. Call it what it is. Yeah. I'm disrespectful. Now, if you disrespect me and I smack you across your face, ain't you going to call the police? Ain't you going to say I have no right to put my hands on you? Why is it any different?
Yep. I mean, my whole thing is this, right? And I'm going to get off this shit just because.
We got other shit to talk about, I think.
We got other shit to talk about, you know, but I actually talked to Tone about this when it happened. I was in Costco. There was a security guard.
And I giggled my ass off. Here we go.
He had a Blue Lives Matter mask on. And our Costco is made up of, like, so, a little background. Gaithersburg, Maryland is, I think, like, the most diverse city in the country. Okay? This Costco sits in Gaithersburg, Maryland. And so the Costco reflects that with the staff, Latin, Middle Eastern, Asian, you know, Black, African folk, like just everything, everyone. And every once in a while you see a couple of regular white folks. The regular white folks was one white dude was talking to the, you know, Blue Lives Matter cop, or not even cop, Blue Lives Matter security guard. And they're standing in front of the bathroom, kind of on each side of the door. And I see this, and I'm laughing, and I'm like, there are no blue lives, man. What are you talking about? And I just look at him, and I look at the other dude, and I laugh, and I walk through. They both stop dead in their conversation. Like, did this just happen? Yes, motherfucker, it happened. You know, and it's just a little fun anecdote. But the reality is this. There is a false equivalency for a job and an existence. They are not the same.
Absolutely. Your blue life ends the minute you take off that uniform. My black life, however, is forever.
There is no blue life. You got paid to do that.
I mean, yep.
You chose that. That is a profession. Like, if an event planner had a fucking color, motherfucker, I'm not a purple life. Get the fuck out of here. It's a job. I choose to do this shit. I get paid every 2 weeks off this shit. I got a 401k. Right? Like, it is not the same. We black from the moment of conception. And we're black until we fucking die. So they're not the same. So fuck out of here with that shit.
Well, and to even suggest that it's, like, look, their sentiment comes from a place where they say, you know, the police lives matter as well. Now, it, which is, of course they do. Yes, they do. But that's not the point. It's offensive to suggest that Blue Lives Matter is equivalent to Black Lives Matter. And to suggest that to people who fly the, you know, the thing that gets me is it's just like seeing, it's not as bad, but it's getting to that point. I was going to relate it to the Confederate flag, but the black and white flag with the blue stripe in the middle, the Blue Lives Matter flag. Yep. It's just like seeing that is just, I don't know. I want to say something like, you know, I want to go like, but wait, that are you a Smurf? Fucking Grover from Sesame Street. Like, it's not the same thing. It never will be the same thing. I understand it's okay to say police lives matter too. Okay, fine. But that's not the argument here. What we're talking
about. The reason why it's not the argument here is because we all acknowledge that police lives matter.
Right. I mean,
particularly post 9/11, the hero worship that comes along with police officers and firefighters is like nothing else in the entire world. People look at us like we're crazy. Because in other parts of the world, these are just fucking jobs. But here, you're a fucking hero. And I don't want to make light of the sacrifices they make for all of us, because I think that would be incorrect. But
all we're doing right now is that people who believe that, though, would listen to what you just said and feel justified in continuing to say that.
Yeah, that's because they're trying to be ignorant. You're trying to be naive. Like you're being willfully ignorant. You don't want to listen because you believe that your discomfort is worth more than somebody else's existence.
Yes. Exactly. And that thought is what has infected that entire base. And you can't unteach that. You cannot.
That's real. That's real. It's like my comfort is worth more than your rights.
Yes.
I have right to feel you know, I have a right to feel comfortable. Which is
You guys have said on this, you know, like, you know, saying talking about racism, you know, or saying even for me to talk about, you know, white supremacy or privilege or any of that. It's not easy to talk about that from my end. But that doesn't make it any less important to discuss it.
Yeah. At some point, it makes it more important because you are sitting in a place of discomfort and recognizing that you still have to go through that.
Correct. But you know, I I've said this many, many times. You know, I have the disadvantage of hearing more of that mentality that I would like to, being where I am in the country, being where I, you know what I mean? You cannot unteach those thoughts, and that is the most frustrating. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what you try to.
There's an indoctrination that comes along. You know, it's part of the group. It's part of the culture.
Yeah.
I've seen it. I've been around it too. You know, and it's difficult. And, you know, for some folks, I feel bad because they don't believe it, but they're afraid to speak out.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got to do something different. You know, I think what happened here is an American tragedy. I think what happened behind the scenes is just a full-on travesty in terms of the way that our system is set up, because there's no way it should have happened this way. No, like I don't give a shit what you can tell me that the grand jury saw that influenced their decisions. I don't care. If you are killed while sleeping in your room and nobody is held accountable for that, we gotta start over, man. This ain't that. You know, I'm not gonna sit up here and be like, abolish the police. That's not what I'm trying to tell you.
No, and that's absurd. Ain't nobody talking.
No.
So there are people. Let's be fair. There are people talking like that.
But yeah, in those movies, very, like, that's not realistic.
Very fucking few. And it's not fucking realistic. Ain't nobody talking about that, man. I don't want that.
Well, but, I mean, we already described it's you know, the cry for defunding the police is dumb. And I mean, have you seen those commercials that the Trump campaign is running where it's somebody's calling 911 and they're like, hey, somebody's just been shot or somebody's robbing my house. And they're like, because the police have been defunded, someone will get back to you in approximately 3 hours or, you know, 5 months or,
yeah.
And as if suggesting defunding the police is to take the police away.
Yep. That's being literally ignorant to change the focus so you don't have to hear what the real is.
Right. Right.
Right. That's fucking shameful. And they're hoping to get to the gates of hell, these motherfuckers embraced by the warmest of flames.
Hell is too late for me. I need it now.
Right.
I need it now.
But look, I don't want to be in this public forum wishing bad on people. So that's why I say it this way. All right.
Fair enough.
That's why I say it that way. But let's get off of this shit, man. You know, we got some. Let's go to Korea.
Yeah.
Come on, you ready to go to Korea?
Let's do that.
Oof. Oof. And by the way, I had to look up the fictional creature this week online just to see what I was dealing with, you know, what I was watching.
Spoilers for Lovecraft episode, was it 6?
Mm-hmm. I believe it is 6.
Something episode 6. Yeah. Was it Meet Me in Daegu?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A.K.A. Tick and Naruto.
Right. Which is, what was the fucking Judy Garland, Meet Me in St. Louis?
So right.
It was a take on Judy Garland.
Meet Me in Daegu.
Yeah. It's Daegu? Okay. Yeah. So,
it could be another Daegu. Another different episode, too.
This didn't feel like nothing. I mean, 75 to 80% of the dialogue is in Korean.
Yeah.
It was so different. So, you know, this is a different episode altogether.
And Jamie Chung doing some great work.
Look, I posted about this shit. I don't want to hear anything about anybody's real world or anything about anybody's anything. Jamie Chung was acting her ass off.
Why wouldn't anyone dispute that? I'm lost.
Well, because of how she got her start on MTV. That's why.
Yep. They said, you know, she was in the real world. So people like to downplay.
But I mean, I would argue, and I think most people.
Courtney Cox was in a music video.
Yeah, it was Bruce Springsteen.
That's stupid. Do you know how many people got their start in dumb shit?
Jennifer Aniston was in
Jennifer Lopez was a backup dancer.
She was a fly girl.
She's a fly girl, yep.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear this shit. Like, come on, yo. She was good, man. Can we just say she was good?
Jamie Chung was
very good. Is the best she's ever been.
I agree.
She was outstanding.
She actually won an award, I think, last year for a small indie film that she pretty much carried. So I'm assuming
she, that's really?
She,
yeah. Really?
She should catch a nom for this episode. I'm not fucking around. Straight up.
Yeah, she's like, half Korean, her real house.
Yeah, show me a supporting actress role that she can't fuck with on this episode.
Yeah, like, I mean, it may be a guess just because it was only one episode, but
even that just makes her chances better.
Yeah, I agree. This shit was crazy, and one of the things that I really liked about this episode was the slow progression from the otherness that surrounds Jamie Chung's character, and then we slowly roll into the conflict that came around with the Korean War. And the stakes change a little bit. Go ahead, Scott, you want to talk about this real fast?
So that's...
And if not, you, Tom Ken, as the expat, as they call it.
No, yeah, well, actually, that's probably a better idea.
y'all keep fucking with me. Keep it up.
No, where I would have where I was going with this. This had another episode, or had another scene in it where I'm being led down one direction, and then suddenly I find my jaw kind of hitting the floor a little bit, going, the show's done it again. It's completely baffled me in a good way, and challenged me on what I'm watching. And I guess that's a testament really to the whole Lovecraft idea of horror and whatnot. But I call it the Cat O' Nine Tails is kind of what I was referring to, Jamie Chung as in the episode.
It's a.
And I had.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I had to look up what she was referred to. I had no idea what it was, that reference. It's a Kumiho.
Kumiho, yeah.
When you find out what it is, and then you're just like, wow, they took that in the darkest way possible, and it's another kind of another grand slam.
I think it speaks to sort of the depth of research that they do on the show, because the Kumiho, the Kitsune, there's another name for it in Cantonese that I don't remember right now, but the Nine-Tailed Fox, which is where the Naruto reference I so crudely made earlier comes from, it's a common character in Asian culture, at least in these three cultures, Korean, Japanese, and Chinese, and it comes from, basically, it's very simple, it's just a fox who's lived a really long time, and then she becomes a nine-tailed fox. They're tricksters in Japan and Chinese. They're neither good nor bad. For whatever reason, in Korea is the only culture where they are inherently thought of as evil. And they typically take the form of beautiful women, lure men away to do dastardly things to them. Think, their version of mermaids. And I thought that was interesting that they show her doing this bad, because that's true to the Korean ethos, that they're, inherently evil. But they also sort of leave it open, as it is in Japan and in China, where she has a choice as to whether or not she's going to actually hurt Tick or not. And I found that really, I found that
very satisfying. Sure, she's going to hurt anyone.
Right, but it didn't seem like it wasn't framed like that at first.
Right.
It was framed like, this is what you do.
Right. And there's an endpoint to all of this.
Well, she started to question it a little bit before him, though, before it was.
But how similar is that to the way that black folks in America have been cast into a role of, this is who you are, and this is what you are. Meanwhile, we are living internal lives in our black ass neighborhoods, in our black ass families, in our black ass houses, where we know that we are so much more than what people call us. Yep. So that parallel once again rang true, and I found that I'm a fan. Obviously, I love the shit. Like, they are, they're hitting these story points on all levels. It's the shit they show you, it's the shit they talk about, and then it's the shit behind the scenes, and they hidden every point.
Yeah, like the idea that you just have to do this before you're free. You just ruin the souls of 100 more black people before you're free, right?
Right, right.
But in this one,
as if that's not going to weigh on you, as if that's going to become a new kind of bondage.
Right. But the idea is, you use them for revenge. You use us for your own purposes. You use us. For your entertainment, for your diversity numbers. You use us for our style, swag, culture, what have you.
Right. I mean, it's something that I alluded to this on Twitter, but they're setting up monsters and systems as organizations that create monsters. You have a system of patriarchy in Korea that turned Jamie Chung's mother into a monster, where she knowingly sacrificed her daughter to this horrible man.
Right.
Then you have the system of magic that turns Jamie Chung literally into a monster, so that she can sort of avenge her mother's honor, whatever sense that makes. And then you show a military system that turns Tick into a monster, killing people with no remorse for no reason.
Man, you know? I'm just following orders.
Right, exactly. Where we've heard that before.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's this argument that, you know, that organized systems are organisms, i.e. the conversation we just had, and they have, you know, they have a homeostasis. They will do what they can to protect themselves. And you have to break the system. You have to step outside of it, like Jamie Chung did towards the end.
Yeah, but, you know, one of the things that you recognize is that there was a level of naivete behind Jamie Chung's character. You know, she was
absolutely.
Like, do you know Judy Garland? And to hear Tick and the other Korean cat just kind of go over why that would never be. And it was sad for Tick, but it was sadder for the Korean cat.
Yeah.
Because this is a dude with no home. Where he's like, yeah, they shit on me in America, they shit on me here.
Like, yeah, it's something they speak about in one of my, you know, in one of the race theories that, you know, that Asians are perpetual foreigners. You could be 5, 6, 7, 9 generations deep, but people see you and think, where are you from? You're not American. Whereas, you know, if for better or for worse, something quintessentially American about the Negro.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing about, you know, black kids who grew up outside of the hood. You're far too black to be with the white kids, but you're not black enough for the black kids.
Yeah.
You know, being caught in that, but, you know, seeing it from the Asian lens was really fucking, was well done, but also fucking sad as shit, man.
Yeah, it's the, you know, it's funny, you know, they used to call America the salad bowl. Well, wait, first we were the, what was the it? The melting pot.
Melting
and pot. It was the salad bowl. But you know, to watch this show, it feels more like the meat grinder.
Yeah. Did you guys notice who the first dude was?
No.
Do you know the show Heroes?
Yeah.
So that was you know, Heroes.
That was Hero Sidekick.
Yep.
Yeah. God, he looks the same. That motherfucker has not aged at all.
His name is James Kyson. He's American, South Korean. The motherfucker's 44 years old.
He does not look it.
Did my homegirl Rose always say Asian don't raise him?
That's my homegirl.
I was trying to think of something clever to say, but I would have butchered it and been offensive. So
my homegirl.
I might have said something Asian and racist, so I'm not going to say it. That's what the thought was. I'm glad we didn't do that.
No. My point was, I was thinking of something like, you know, like the black don't crack.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
This motherfucker, you know, he looked pretty fucking great. And he came out there and did his thing, but shit didn't end up so well for your mans.
No. And I think with what we've seen so far, I think we can be relatively assured that we're going to see Ms. Chung again.
Yeah.
She's definitely going to turn up. I will say this, for all of the metaphors and similes and symbolism and meta, this was the least satisfying episode for me so far.
Yeah.
It
moved the story the least.
It moved the story the least, for sure. And then I've really enjoyed... this is definitely a serialized tale. It's not like these stories can exist outside of each other. But I have enjoyed how encapsulated they are. Every story is its own story, in and out. And this is the first one that feels unfinished to a degree.
Okay.
You know, like, this feels like a two-parter, frankly.
I can dig that.
Or frankly, a very long setup for a payoff down the line. And this is the first time I felt that with this.
I can dig that. Scott, what about you? What do you think about this one?
I really enjoyed it. I, you know, like I said, I like the, you know, I like when I watch something in horror, you know, all the history that we get with the show and everything is, I feel like I'm learning so much every week. So I'm trying to, I try to focus more on the horror and what's really truly just making me feel unsettled. And, this episode did that in spades. I thought that it was, I like I said, the first scene of all the with all the tales was just, I mean, it was, I don't know where I thought it was going, but that is not where I thought it was going. So
yeah, I definitely like that. Look, nobody had that on their bingo card.
No, that shit caught me with my open straight up.
Yeah, that shit was crazy. It was good though.
It was good, and I like the episodes. You know, I like episodes that kind of take a detour a little bit because I like the world building aspect of it. And you know, like I remember when Stranger Things was on, nobody really liked the episode where you find out about that other powerful kid. Yes. But I liked that
episode.
You did. I talked about that a lot.
And so I just, world building is something that is hard to do successfully, and I can only think of, you know, like Star Wars has done it really well, Game of Thrones has done it really well, but it's hard to do it successfully. But I think that the times that, you know, even the small times that can do it, like this episode did it well, and that Stranger Things episode, in my opinion, did it well. It's just, I like that. It's a nice detour without going too far off, because I do agree we're going to see her again. I think that creates a really interesting conflict for Atticus. It creates a really interesting conflict for Letty. It creates a really interesting conflict really for, you know, the show by bringing her back present day in real life. Yep. Atticus, because he's only ever seen her since then in dreams.
Yep.
And so I, you know, maybe she pops up and he thinks he's in a dream at first, or maybe, you know, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things where they can go here. So yeah, it's a cool detour, but I do see it interjecting with the main story big time. Cause I think she really wants to save him.
Yeah. No, I think she loves him because as a demon, yeah, she, you know, he's the first mortal that made her feel anything. She had never felt anything, which is the reason why she never could make any type of connection, because she had no connection with those feelings. She came across as cold and unwanting. That was the thing that she so deeply desired before this. She could never get to it. I had a couple of quick hits. You know, at one point, Jamie Chung's character talks about she can control her tails around him.
Mm-hmm.
And Atticus started stroking real strong. All of a sudden, that control was gone.
You are not shit.
Look, I'm just call that shit like I see it. That shit was an offensive foul. We going the other way. The Asian, the racism from the white soldiers against the Asian dude, that shit was astounding. And they were, you know, if that is accurate in any way, that shit is heartbreaking. This motherfucker got drafted, and they treat him like shit. Like, get the fuck out of here, man. This motherfucker out of here.
Hundred.
It still goes.
Golly, no. Like that's just so hard, man.
It the still shows who I the true monsters are of the on the show. The true monsters are the racism.
That theme of monsters within and without, man. You got real monsters, and Jamie Chung sucking your life and blowing you to fucking.
She's still not as bad, because we're going to, you know, we want to see her by the end of the show. You know, she's, we can relate to her. Yep. Whereas, you know, you see the blatant hatred through racism, and you can't relate to that at all.
Yep.
And it's just such an interesting theme that the show plays both in America and now in Korea as well.
Yep.
So they do it really well. It's really well done.
They do. My other quick hit was Tick is one of the loneliest characters I've ever seen in my life.
It's one of the what?
Loneliest.
Yeah.
He's one of the loneliest characters I've ever seen. Even the little quick cuts they showed of him sitting alone in the dark reading books by a flashlight, getting whipped by his dad. enlisting. He traveled all the way across the world to find something or run away from something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, you know, I think I might have even tweeted this shit out. These things don't go away if you hide. They're just waiting for you when you come back out.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Jamie Chung even told him, dude, you go back home, you're going to die. This is it. This is all the way around this. This is what's going to happen.
And yet, what did he do?
Yep. Went his ass back
home. This is
well, but I mean, to be fair, the woman he loved also had tails coming out of every orifice of her body. So, yes.
Eyes, I mean, mouth, ears.
She was still fine though. I mean, he could have worked that out. I'm just playing.
So good. So damn good.
Oh, that is good.
That's good. Okay.
Well, what I am saying is this though: Tick has shown a propensity. You know, what's the quote? Many a man has been thought to be brave for fear of turning away. Like, Tick is a coward. And we have seen this over and over and over again. And I think what we're seeing now in the present day is Tick's
I don't know if he's a coward, but go ahead.
Well, I will say Tick has been a coward. And yes. He has a tendency towards cowardice.
Sometimes
it's emotional cowardice and running away from his feelings or things that he feels. Sometimes it's literal cowardice. And he has a tendency to run away as opposed to facing problems head on.
Yep.
He ran away from his father. He ran away from Ms. Chung. He, to a degree, ran away from Letty.
He tried to run away from Letty, but shit got until, too thick.
Yeah, until he was provoked to a point where...
Yeah. But even after that, he tried to run away, which is what Letty was so pissed off at him about.
Exactly.
Motherfuckers ain't come back in that particular cycle. You know, her moment, and then again, his moment, was just so fucking wild. Good God. Just to even talk about it in those terms.
Just to take a small detour, we got to talk about, we have to compare Tick's first time against Letty's first time.
Right.
Yep. How beautiful it was that Tick was handled. The care that he was handled with. And I don't even know what I would call it. Just the
there was no, it was care, it's love, right?
Yeah,
there was a, you know,
but in comparison,
I don't want to hurt you, which is a double meaning, but
right,
you know.
Right. But what would we call what he handled Letty with? You know,
lust,
disregard. Yeah. No, it was more than lust, though. It was like,
selfishness
and assumption, right? There was genuine assumption,
entitlement.
There's the miscalculation that capability everywhere else equals experience and intimacy. You know what I mean? You know, and Tick's face when he found out said all of that.
Right, and seeing his first time now sort of cemented exactly why he felt, why his face portrayed all of that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I agree.
Good use of flashback there.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. They did a fantastic job.
I agree with y'all. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the flash forward to Tick's quote-unquote death, because we know how these shows work. The motherfucker might die, and then he might be resuscitated or blah, 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 blah. I'm not putting too much faith in that. But the flash forward to his death, I think, is telling. And I again, have to say, I think that it is, I think 100% we are going to see her again.
Yeah. And Victoria Ain't Shit definitely has something to do with him dying. So we're going to go.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if she joins the Scooby Gang and joins up with, you know, the Negroes in Peril against the Peril, like, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Okay. And the last thing, I don't think Tick was in love. He didn't know what love was. I don't even necessarily know if this is infatuation. What I think this was acceptance for who he was and relief and freedom in a way that he had never experienced in his whole life. So I guess maybe in some ways it is love. But, you know, there was just, this person doesn't judge me.
Kinship, yeah. I think, is a way to go about it. Yeah. He met a girl who was smart, who was in the media like he was. You know, she had saw the movie for The Count of Monte Cristo, didn't quite understand the difference between the movie and the book. They got to explain that. Like, he felt a kinship with this woman. And she, too, was an outsider, a lonely person. Yeah. So, you know, this is the first time he's felt kinship, which is incredible, you know, to your point of him being the loneliest person you've ever met. Yep. Incredibly, you know, he's one of the few, you know, I'm just going to say it. Not every black boy gets to be raised to his adulthood with his father.
Yep.
It's not a thing that every black man gets to have. And this is something that he had. You know, this advantage that all of us say, you know, to what is it, Fonte that says, and all of us said that we'd be better if we would have known our father. Like, this is something that he has had, and yet he feels no kinship with his father. And his father felt no kinship with his father. This is a generational thing that they have passed down. So to think that, you know, he's had these people in his life and felt relative little kinship, he had to travel halfway around the globe to finally feel that, is bracing. To say the least.
Yeah, to say the least. Scott, anything else before you move on to Amazon?
No, I'm looking forward to next week. I mean, at this point, I have no clue what to expect any given week anymore. Not that I did 2 weeks ago, but you know, I'm looking forward to it. I like that's my favorite part of the show, is that it's the same story with the same characters, but every episode's different.
Yep, and I think this week we get to see Hippolyta's journey and how this intertwines with that thing that Victoria Ancient Christina was looking for, and Hippolyta may have unlocked. So we're going to find out a little bit more about all of this.
I think
it may give us a couple more answers than we got this week. So we'll see.
Well, yeah, but again, this week was just, it was a detour flashback episode. So, you know, you don't, really, all this one did was give us background on Atticus. Just small character. I mean, there's a lot of character stuff, and it was, you know, it did its purpose. But I'm ready to get back to the main. Let's go back to the main focus.
Particularly after the last couple episodes, like I'm ready for that shit.
Right.
So yeah, anything else, Tom? Before we go to the boys.
No, let's get on them boys.
All right. So we get to the boys and. So we was wrong. I was right a little bit. Stormfront just as strong as Homelander.
Oh, I think the thing that set it off was when she had him burn her chest.
Yes.
I mean, that was just like, she just kind of snickered at it. I'm going like,
laser whoa. My tits.
As
the line goes.
No, let's quote the woman. Don't be a pussy. Laser my tits. Yep.
Which Homelander had never been spoken to that way. His face was just kind of like, huh?
Yeah, this motherfucker was turned the fuck on up. He was on 11. Oh, yeah. Hard. Pushed through all that Velcro and Lycra. I don't know what the fuck that shit. But our ideas, they may still come to pass in terms of the Stormfront and Homelander conflict. But they on the same team, and they have an air sex. So, yeah, I don't know what to tell you about that.
But, hey, Queen Maeve's making moves, though.
Yeah.
She's so trying.
Maybe we missed the ball. Maybe the ball is not, you know, Homelander against Stormfront. Maybe it's everybody else versus those two.
So, was the first episode that got me thinking that.
Yeah,
and I think that might be the way they go.
I think that might be the way it has to be.
Well, especially with how it ended with Billy or Butcher and Black Noir, even the way they got him to kind of stand down, it did make me think that they can work together to a degree to bring down a greater evil, which at this point they all thought was Stormfront. It's weird. The focus for a lot of these characters has been, who is Stormfront? where they've kind of lost focus off of Homelander, I guess, besides Butcher. But even still, he's still not really thinking Homelander. Now they have to think about them both.
Yep.
Well, Homelander is hiding in plain sight. So
yep. Right. Correct.
Easy to miss him. He's in the fucking sky. He's wearing the goddamn flag. Like.
Yeah, man. Shit's real.
Yeah, they're terrifying together. Yeah,
they are.
You know, once upon a, you know, every once in a while you, I mean, you see this in your adult life, you run upon a couple, and it's one thing when you meet, like, one really twisted individual. It's another thing when you meet, like, two of them together, and you get to see that secret sauce interplay, and it's, yeah. like, horrifying, but,
you're
like,
oh, this is why our motherfuckers is together.
Right. That's what's going on right here, and it's terrifying. So, I mean, and that's not to say that this is genuine. I believe wholeheartedly Stormfront is manipulating Homelander, but I also think that she is enjoying this shit.
She's so, absolutely manipulating him. She manipulates
everybody.
So if that's true, though, he joins back with the other guys to bring her down.
That is quite possible.
No, I don't see it.
His ego may be in the way of him doing that. Or she does something to her ego bad enough where he's like, oh, well, I'm going to laser your earlobes or something. I don't know.
You have to pay attention to the language. Whenever Stormfront talked to Homelander, it was like, I'm here for you if you need me.
Yep.
Talk to me if you want me. Like, she made a very big, she made a point to be assertive but submissive. Like, I'm here. But I won't bother you more than that. I'm here, sir. I'm here to serve you. I'm here. That's what got him. I don't see his ego being able to survive realizing that she has played him.
Yeah, and he's been number two the whole time.
Yeah, he's gonna push his chips in. When they call, he's not gonna fold. He's gonna push all his chips into the Stormfront. They're gonna go down together. I don't see his ego surviving that.
Well, so I don't know where the is Stormfront, is she in the comics?
Yeah, really, I don't know.
Not the ones I read. I don't think she is.
So that makes me
think. I think this is a, you know, a confection of the writer's room.
Okay. So, I mean, here's a prediction for, or not a prediction, a question, really. Do we think, you know, who's dying? Who's dying this year? Anybody dying? Because last year, I mean, you know, the world was translucent died.
Right. Does it have to be Stormfront? Or is it going to be Black Noir?
Or is it going to be Homelander?
Superman ain't going to die. The show is less interesting with him off the board.
Oh, no. I agree with that.
His little flash moment, like, where he almost lost it, that was one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen. But also, what I would expect, it was his Brightburn moment, that's what I would expect from that character. But if the capacity for that to happen is taken off the board, the show, the stakes become so much less high.
That is true. Although, A, how much did you want when he was standing up on the stage, when he burned everybody with his eyes? I was like, whoa, they're really going there already? I can't even believe it. I thought it was real at first. I didn't even think that it was fake.
I did as well, but then realizing it wasn't, you know, that made sense too. Quick update, Stormfront is in the comics, but not the way we see them now.
Okay.
I don't know.
The Boys is on my short list of like shit. I'm curious, but then, you know, I'm curious now, but I don't want to ruin anything on the TV show. So.
Yeah, no, I don't know who's dying. I'm not sure anyone's dying at this point. But I, you know what? I have a sneaking suspicion it might be MM. And it might not necessarily be the next episode, but I have a sneaking suspicion MM is not going to make it to the end.
Now that's sad. He's just got one of the best names.
Mother's Milk. Are you kidding me?
And Laz Alonso plays him very well.
He plays him super well. As I understand it, this, you know, the little bit of OCD they worked in, that came from him. Like, that's not something that was part of the character. They ran with that.
Yeah, no, he's actually OCD. He talked right. about, you know, there are times where he goes into people's trailers when they're not there, and he cleans up for them.
Oh, my God. Did you tell me that? Was that? Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, Damon was the one that I think told him to say, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, his OCD hilarious. Is very real.
So, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, from that perspective, I think it's awesome to be able to bring it in, you know, because Laz was talking about the fact that it was actually on the Amazon after show with Aisha Tyler. And he was saying that it was the first time he could just be himself because he's normally on set trying to find ways to hide that.
Right.
So it was the first time he could just be who he was, you know, putting all the sugars in place or tapping his spoon three times each time before he took a drink of the tea. Like all these little things, little idiosyncrasies that are tied to his OCD. Super interesting. And to see them played out within a character who is as integral as he is to the show, I think it's very cool.
No, but smart as fuck.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's getting taken off the board. So.
You don't think anybody's getting taken off what now?
Taken off the board.
Oh, somebody's got to die.
Somebody, yeah, but like.
Well, so here's but the like, thing. You know who they kill? I mean, we talked about it last week. Kill Frenchie.
Yeah, but his stakes are less. I mean.
Stakes are almost nothing.
Yeah, I'll let you.
But see, if you kill Black Noir, I feel like Black Noir's mask can just move to someone else.
Right.
You know, like Voight would just Noir, put the mask on someone else.
No, if I
say that he's still alive.
If I had to play like writing room games, then I would say that the Deep is in the middle of a redemption arc, and yep. he's going to get to a good place, and we're going to do that so that we can kill him and fill something for him. So if I had to play writing room games, I would put my money on the Deep.
I don't know, man. This doesn't have the same Game of Thrones feel. Like where Game of Thrones, you knew if they started to give you a whole bunch of background on somebody, those motherfuckers was dead as fucking toast.
Well, it's not just Game of Thrones. It's Joss Whedon. It's Geoff Johns. Like sure. A lot of writers use this trope of I'm gonna take this guy you think is an asshole and I'm gonna redeem him. And then I'm going to yank the rug off underneath you. Like, this isn't, it's not rocket science.
I agree, but I don't know if there was a show that used death to the same level of utility.
Death Joss Whedon, Angel. Angel did it all the time.
No. Angel didn't have 100 named characters and 40 of them motherfuckers died.
Oh, sure.
Angel had a cast of 7 people. Right?
They ended up with a cast of 7 people because they killed motherfuckers along the way.
So, Fred, was the main character in the first season offed at any point in the first season?
Oh, God, I think what was the half... Do you remember the half-demon dude's name?
No.
I don't remember if he was done in the first season, but if it wasn't the first, it was probably the second.
Look, all I'm saying, the way that Game of Thrones handled on-screen deaths... Most shows don't have that. I think because of that, they have now changed the paradigm in the fact that you must get used to the idea that somebody that you like may get got next week, and they ain't coming back. The actor going to be blown because they thought they had seasons worth of checks, and they only get 5 episodes.
That was that's what happened to Carl on The Walking Dead, show. Yeah.
You know, Chandler Briggs, he knew he was about to finna get paid. Wrong.
I'm whatever. That motherfucker was. There's no way in hell he thought a character as noxious as the one he was playing was gonna last forever, or he wasn't reading the scripts. That motherfucker was obnoxious as a motherfucker.
Could be.
But then again, his mama made it a long time, and she was trifling.
She wasn't ever supposed to be there.
What am I saying?
Right. So the boys, this past episode, you were really excited about it. Kind of excited about it. Neutral or not excited about it?
boys. I was excited.
Yeah, I was too. I enjoy it. I mean, this, it's nice that, despite all the, you know, I keep saying that we're not going to have a lot of new TV in the fall. I like having new episodes to watch of The Boys on Friday, Lovecraft on Sunday, even though I usually watch it on Monday.
Yeah.
I'm watching The Vow still, so it's nice that it's just nice to have shows that are weekly and I can look forward to them on, you know, just small things to look forward to during the day, during the week. It's nice. So, I have not been disappointed by The Boys yet. So,
Neither. I like it a lot.
And did you say they announced they're doing a spinoff?
With whom?
It's going to be set in the same world. No characters on the show. It's going to focus on a Voight college full of soups.
Wow.
Training them to be real superheroes.
For the
yeah.
Seven.
Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense. I'm here for it.
Particularly. Quote, very R-rated.
Sheesh. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Although the Boys is pretty R-rated, so.
Yeah, it's wild as fuck. It is wild as fuck.
Very wild. Very wild.
All right. Well, Boys, they'll be on tomorrow. So, shit's up now, actually. Now think about it.
Actually, yeah, I was going to say, I think it's available right now.
It's up now. So what else is next? I know we want to talk about Woke.
I have not had a chance to catch any of that.
Well, we can't spoil that one then yet.
We might have to push it because I don't know if I can talk about it without spoiling it.
I agree. Just know that it's quite good, and pay attention to the experience. It's very real. You know, the things we talked about, colorism and a whole bunch of other shit, are very apparent and at play here, and it's done masterfully. So, like that. What else? You watch anything else, man?
I haven't really caught anything new here recently.
I caught up on Into the Badlands, DMZ Kung Fu joint.
That's a weird thing to catch up on.
Yeah, man. I like Kung Fu flicks. And I hadn't watched. Right. I gave up on it in the middle of season two. And it was alright. Like, it's not terrible. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't great either. But it was good. I could scratch that itch.
I was gonna say the itch scratch shows are good ones though, so I get it.
Yeah, I did that. I also caught up on a flick. You Should Have Left.
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon. Yeah. Let's just be clear. 62-year-old Kevin Bacon.
Yep.
Married to a 34-year-old Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah, Seyfried. Yep.
Yeah, so young. I can't even pronounce her name. It's weird seeing a dude who's old enough to be your father supposedly married with a chick who's too young for you to date. Weird.
Wait, what's the movie called?
You
Should Have Left. And, you know, I think I described one flick here as, like, aggressively fine. I can't give it the aggressively. It's, like, fine.
Oh, dude, I remember seeing, so I'm looking at the poster. I remember seeing the poster and thinking, oh, Kevin Bacon's playing the father and Seyfried's playing the daughter.
Yeah, I remember seeing this poster and thinking, I'm not watching this shit. Like, it's stupid.
Well, yeah, on top of that.
But there's nothing to watch. All I'm going to catch that shit and get off of my assorted watch list. So this was the joint. And like I said, it's fine. It's not good. It's not bad. It's fine.
It's a Blumhouse joint too, so.
It is. I mean, you know, they did it better with actually, now I'm thinking about it, I'm more disappointed in it than I realized I was. Like, I'm not sure I can.
There's the actual. Fine. That's the real shit.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not sure I can give a fine. It's just, ugh. Like, I would not recommend this at all.
Well, so wait, what are your slashes?
Oh my god, I like, real talk, I shouldn't even waste no flashes on this motherfucker. like, if I'm going to give it slashes, like, it's like, the cinematography's fine, plots, like, fine. The acting is, look, Amanda Seyfried manages to act like she's actually in love with this dude that's old enough to be her daddy, so, like, that's okay. I probably would have given it a 5 if it wasn't for the fact that he's too fucking old to play her husband. So it's like a 3.5. Like, I'm not playing games with these motherfuckers.
Oof. Just like I said, 3.5 wasn't going to be good.
Nah, it's a 3.5. I mean, and if we're not doing half slashes, I'm going to give it a 3. Like, that's how I'm feeling.
Damn. All right, well.
That's harsh.
No, it's deserved. It's deserved. Like, seriously, don't do that anymore. Don't cast no more old ass dudes. I mean, and to their credit though, to be honest, like, Kevin Bacon looks good for 62.
He does.
You know, but Amanda Seyfried also looks good for 34. So most of the time, I'm thinking she's in her late 20s. I'm thinking she's 28, 29.
I mean, so I thought she was 28 for like 5 years. So
yeah, no, she's doing well. She's doing well. But something Damon and I have been watching is Raised by Wolves.
That shit is wild as fuck.
I've been avoiding articles and spoilers like the plague, man.
Yeah. All right. So we can't spoil this if you're interested in seeing it. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it.
Nah.
If we can't spoil it, but just know it is really fucking strange.
It's, you know what? I think I'm going to leave it there. It's really fucking strange.
And not always in a good way. Like, and not even always in an interesting way. Maybe later on in the season, all
is it is it uncomfortable?
Sometimes.
It's fairly uncomfortable, but it's really fucking strange. it's on a couple of different levels. It's not just like situationally strange, which I think is probably what most people would think of, but like even down to like the plotting, the pacing, the direction, the acting, it's just really fucking strange. I would love to like see an interview with the director or the showrunner and to see them sort of like break down some of the choices that they made, because it's strange. It's like strange and awkward, but not often uncomfortable.
I agree with
that. Sometimes, but not often. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with that. Yeah, it's not super uncomfortable. Like, it's not going to make you squirm, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
But still, it's weird.
Very. Very.
Yeah, I take that back. There are a couple moments where you'll be like, holy shit, but then another couple, you'll be like, yo, that's fucked up. So,
and
it vacillates between those two relatively quickly, even in the pilot.
So, Oh, yeah. Like, just casting alone, if you take a second to think about it, is weird. It's weird as
The casting choices.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, the casting choices, I do not understand what they are doing right now.
So weird.
I can't wait. Scott, I might have to ask you to watch this just so we can talk about it.
How many episodes are out now?
Scott, it's not going to take you more than one episode for you to get what most of what we're talking about. But if you watch two, we'll call it good. Like, I'm about 4 or 5 in, but honestly, if you watch two.
Okay.
Like, it gets real weird really fucking fast.
So, yeah.
I will say this quick little thing for it as a selling point. There's a lot of world building that happens.
Yes.
Like, within minutes. Like, the show starts, and a lot of world building happens, like, minutes in. And it's not awkward or forced.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place they've created.
Also, a lot of times, like, once the mystery is resolved or, like, the world building is done, the show often sometimes feels limp. Like, sometimes that's a thing that happens. That doesn't happen here. Like, the world building gets done, and it doesn't go limp. Like, it's still an interesting place. It's weird as fuck, but it's still You're still engaged. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
It's an interesting setup, and it may not necessarily even be what you think it is, but I don't know if I like it.
I don't either.
Yeah, like I don't know if that's the right word.
I'm not sure if I like it, but I'm intrigued. You know, I'm interested. I keep watching it.
Yeah, that's an interesting.
it's fucking weird.
It's a very interesting kind of situation you're in, but check it out, Scott. At least we can talk about it a little bit in the beginning.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Right? No.
What you got over there?
We have one more. I think we talked about Guilty Faves, some movies that we like.
Oh, that's right. You fucking right. That's right. Let's do it. We got about 10 minutes. Let's get them in. It's going to be short.
You got to go first. Come on.
Oh, man. All right, hold on. I was going to say, let's table it for the next episode, but all right, hold on.
Do we think we're going to, if this is going to be more than 10 minutes, let's do it next episode. Let's do it. Let's not rush.
So, to be fair, it's us. It will be more than 10 minutes.
Yeah. Then let's table it. Let's wait for the next episode so we can do this shit right.
All right.
Maybe we'll start with that. And no, we'll start with Lovecraft, and then we'll get into it.
What are you talking about?
Right. I don't know why I lied to y'all like that. So, yeah.
But, here, I'll give you a taste here. I'll tell you what. So I said Blade 2 last week. I'm looking at my wall right now. I even pulled some out, but I put them back. So let me, hold on. I'm just going to give you a little, let's see, what's another one that I really like? See, this is the one that I'm gonna suggest. Okay. There's a movie called, have you guys ever seen a horror movie called Galaxy of Terror?
No.
No.
It's a Roger Corman movie. I know that how that sounds, but hear me out. It's good effects. An early James Cameron. He wasn't even a director or anything. I think he was like second unit or something, but he's in the credits. He did a lot of the production design. And it's got some good practical effects. It's got a cool cast. It's got a cool cover. When you look up the movie, you're gonna go, "What the fuck?" It's cheesy. It's a Corman movie, but it's a high production Corman movie. And I like it. I recommend it. It's not gonna be for everybody, but it's like a low budget, shitty version of like something like an alien or a thing.
All right. You got a brief little one. Okay.
I don't know if I have a brief one. Yeah, I don't know if I have a brief one. You know, there's so many films that we've watched that are terrible, but we like them, right?
And it doesn't even have to be horror. Look, I'm going to give you another little brief one. Does Hot Tub Time Machine count on this list?
Yeah.
That movie's great.
Yeah.
That might be legit, but I don't know.
A lot of people like that film, though.
It's not a bad flick.
How about Hot Tub Time Machine 2?
There you go.
Yeah, now we're barking at the right tree.
All right, now that one, I also really like that, too. So.
I mean, so I'm going to give y'all a quick one, and these are my non-horror. This is just two right now. They're both by Rusty Cundiff. One is called Sprung, and one's called Fear of a Black Hat. I find these movies absolutely amazing and incredible. Not everyone who watches them feels the same way.
Okay, I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing. And that's cool. I got to go with, if we're doing like a little brief one, I got to go with Life Force.
That's on my dude. I just added that to my watch list. I've never seen.
Yeah,
that.
it's on my HBO Max list.
Yeah, it is mine too.
I'm not gonna spoil it for you. I'm gonna say I like it. I think
that's Toby Hooper, baby.
I think you guys will like it as well. I really do.
Oh, I've seen it.
Okay. Well, I like it. I can't think of too much bad to say about it. So, you know, there's that. And then I have to, you know, I'm going to feel real ashamed about this. Scanners. I fucking love them.
Oh, no. You look. I think people will go to any amount of lengths to defend that Cronenberg.
They shouldn't. They're terrible movies. They're terrible.
But they all have messages.
I love them. I love them.
They all have messages.
I don't, the message, it doesn't, the message is lost in the medium. The movies are terrible. They're horrible. But I fucking love them. I love the Scanners for joints. I would never show it to nobody. I would never show it to nobody and be like, yo, look at this. It's representative. No, never in a million years. But okay. I love them, joints. Love them.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So let's hold the rest.
There we go.
For next time.
Okay. Dude, I we could talk hours on movies like this.
Then we should just do it.
Let's go with power. Man.
All right.
Guilty pleasures are, you know, and another one. This is what sparked the conversation. So we ran with this direction. But the direction I like to go, thinking of this too, was when we were talking Blade 2. Think about a director that you like, and is his best movie your favorite movie of theirs?
Right. Mm. Yes. Well, maybe that'll be the mark. Maybe that'll be the mark next time.
That's good. That's good.
You know, it's
That's
like, good. You know, some people's...
That's going to be tough. I got a couple directors in some different places, so... That's interesting. I'll take a look at that.
And that's where the Blade 2 thing was. That's why I said Blade 2 is my favorite Del Toro movie, but it is not his best movie.
No, Del Toro's a solid pick. I like that cat. I like him a lot.
Yeah, I love his explanation of what fear is, or what's scary.
And it is. Mm-hmm.
The last man sitting in a room, last man on earth sitting in a room reading a book, and then a knock at the door.
That's very good.
Yeah.
That's very good. When I heard that shit, I was like, that is fucking terrifying.
Have you guys seen, have you ever watched Kronos?
No.
And then he's got another early one, Devil's Backbone.
Yep, seen Devil's Backbone.
Seen Devil's Backbone. I think I may have seen Kronos. I'd have to look it up. You may have seen that one.
I haven't seen it. I think I own, I bought a Criterion Kronos. I just haven't watched it.
Okay.
And then Devil's Backbones, and they both have been on my radar for a long time. I just haven't gotten around to them. I think he made Mimic, too. Mimic's more like the Blade 2 type movie.
Yeah, and I actually like Mimic a lot.
I've seen it once, so I remember liking it, yeah.
Shit, in that vein, I'm just going to hold off on this next film, because I would just, like, if we keep going, we're going to get into this. So we have
right.
to stop.
You're right.
And then it'll be a couple of hours later, and
exactly, it's gonna
everybody's
be
gonna be mad.
45, motherfuckers gonna be hot because they gotta wake up. Yeah, so let's stop right there, and we'll say that I appreciate y'all. Thanks for humoring me when I got a little angry. And we will keep it pushing. Last thoughts, before we leave. Nope.
So, once again, arrest the cops that murdered Breonna Taylor.
Yes, please.
Stop bullshitting. Come on now.
Yes, please.
Hey, well, we'll see if the protests do anything.
Well, I mean, two cops getting shot, that's only going to make shit worse.
Yo, and of course, let's not forget an RIP to the notorious RBG.
Yep. Absolutely. So, yeah, we are Get Out the Room. You can find us anywhere good podcasts are found. I am Dave for Scott and for Tom. We will catch y'all next time, man.
Peace.
Peace.